again, we say greetings to each and every one of you. Welcome. Welcome to another round of Culturally Conscious Communications here on the LIB Radio Network. My name is Kiti Obiawadu, a.k.a. The Conscious Rasta. This is where you and I get together weekday mornings. We come at you live from 7 a.m. on the West Coast. That's 10 a.m. for our East Coast listeners. And that is 3 p.m. GMT, Accra time. We get together with you to deal with culture, consciousness, historical perspectives. We deal with entertainment, economics, education, health, labor, law, politics, religion, family, conflict, all areas of human interactivity and human development. Today's date is Thursday. It is the 10th of July, the year 2008 in the Roman Western Gregorian calendar. And this corresponds to the year 6248 in the calendar of ancient chemistry, which we have realigned our cultural clock. Welcome to the seventh millennium. You have found your family in a peaceful place here on LIB Radio, LibLife.com, and LIB TV. My apologies to everybody for something that's unfortunately out of my control. For the last 2 days, for some odd reason, we just have not been able to get the television signal running properly, and we're doing everything we can to figure out what is the issue. What is the issue? And so in the background, I'll make sure that I go through and check out what is the problem there. But yeah, we've done everything. I've had the TV hosts on with me yesterday. We were trying to solve the problem and couldn't seem to come up with a solution. So we're going to do the best we can. Meanwhile, those of you who are listening to LIB Radio are listening to LIB Radio on our Live 365 server, as well as our U broadcast. You can always go to the front page of LIB Radio and you'll get the server information as to where to be able to listen to the broadcast 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We have a guest joining us today who I've been wanting to have on. We've actually had some of his speeches and libations that we've collected that we've shared with you, but we have him live and direct. Perhaps one of the most brilliant and affecting minds we have, intellectual minds. He's an artist, he is a creator, he's an author, a researcher, he is a black man with an attitude. Let us welcome our brother joining us on the telephone line out of Osset City, Atlanta, Brother Chika Okuwa. Brother Chika, welcome to the program today.
What's up, Brother Kitty? And I want to say, you said I have an attitude. This morning I have an attitude of gratitude, brother. I just want to thank you because I count it an honor and a blessing to be on with you and the LIB family this morning.
All right. Just a little brief bio that you supplied for us. Who is Chika Okuwa? Chika Okuwa is 1992 graduate of Hampton University and a 2003 graduate of Clark Atlanta U. Selected as one of Ebony Magazine's 50 Leaders of Tomorrow. Okuwa, former Teacher of the Year. In addition, Okuwa has assisted in leading over 500 youth and adults on study tours to Egypt and Ghana through the Desert Club's Teen Summit 1000 program. Authored and produced several books and DVDs, including The African Origins of Our Faith, a book and DVD, African Origins of Writing and Mathematics DVD, African Sacred Science and Civilization, The Miracle of the Ma'afa, Reading Revolution, the book, A Treasure Within, Stories of Remembrance and Discovery. Brother Chika, you've done so many things, and for such a young brother, we really, really appreciate the fire and the spirit you're carrying forward.
Well, I definitely appreciate what you're doing, Brother Kitty, with the LIB family and just spreading the word literally around the world and out in the higher dimensions of the atmosphere. And if you like the things that I've already done in these first few years, get ready, brother, because we're about to take it to a whole nother level.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, taking it to a whole nother level. So you've been taking your African origins on tour. Talk to us about what's been happening now with your tour.
Well, there have been such a tremendous outpouring of people who want to learn more about our history and our culture that when I returned from Egypt and Ghana last year, we launched African Origins on tour, and it's been a tremendous success. We've been on college campuses. We've been at educational conferences. We've been at elementary, middle schools, and high schools, and it's met with a tremendous response. So basically, we're going around the country and literally around the world sharing this message about who we are as a people and what makes us so powerful as a people. Because one of the things that I found, Brother Keating, is that we're illuminating the link between history and destiny. Mm-hmm. And the link between history and destiny is our identity.
Mm-hmm.
Because identity tells us who we are. Identity determines your activity. So if I think I'm the N-word, I'm going to act like the N-word. If I think I'm disempowered and disenfranchised, then I will be disempowered and disenfranchised. But what African Origins on Tour allows us to do, it allows us to illuminate that link between history and destiny, which is our identity. We have to know who we are. And once we know who we are, we'll truly understand that nothing is impossible to us.
Mm-hmm. You're making such profound sense and reminding me always why I just love reading your writings. I love listening to you. And I am firmly convinced that the evidence of knowledge of who an individual is or a group of people are, that evidence is their behaviors and their outcome. And you can tell by someone's activities, by their behaviors, by their passionate commitments, the extent to which they are functioning within their own self-identity knowledge base.
One of the things that we like to say is demonstration beats conversation. In other words, you can tell me how conscious you are or all these different things, but the bottom line is, what are you doing with the so-called consciousness that you say that you have? And so, Brother Keating, I try to surround myself only with culturally conscious, spiritually centered people who are committed to the core. That means they are action-oriented, that they're already doing the necessary things to move us forward as a people, and they're demonstrating the type of activities, nation-building activities, that we all need to be about. And yet again, that's another reason why I launched African Origins on Tour, not only to share the information, but to connect with other brothers and sisters like that around the country and around the world. As a matter of fact, I'm really pleased because just recently we launched AfricanOriginsOnTour.com, where people can actually view a couple of video clips of some of the presentations that we've done and get other critical information about the things that we're doing.
Okay. Now, we're getting a little bit of breakup on your telephone. I don't know what's happening. I can hear you, but it's definitely breaking up rather significantly. If that continues, if that persists, I may just hang up and ring you right back on the same line and see
okay.
if we can just get the connection a little clearer. And when I hear you talk, it's very firm, very deliberate about the intent here, and I do wholeheartedly agree with that. Yet in nation building, you understand that we're having people coming from a lot of different places, a lot of different stages, and some under different impact or aspects of parts of the Ma'afa. They may be in various states of psychological disturbance, Dr. Joy Leary calls it post-enslavement trauma syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore, I'm convinced that those of us who are getting out on point to take responsibility for the movement, we have to use a combination of the carrot and the stick. Is that your approach also, that we have to reward as well as to discipline our people in order to manage this movement going a certain direction?
Absolutely. I think, one of the things that I've determined is that those of us who would dare call ourselves conscious have to be able to reach our people wherever they are. Because if we would humble ourselves, we would realize that there was somebody who was thoughtful enough and conscientious enough to reach out to us before we came into the knowledge of who we are. And so we have to appreciate where a person is and accept them and love them for where they are and lovingly help them along the way. But as you just mentioned, sometimes that can require discipline. Sometimes that can mean pulling a brother or a sister up and saying, well, hey, you may want to rethink the way that you're doing this. You may want to reanalyze or refocus this particular concept and get them to see things from a different perspective. And I know that it has always been people who did that with me, who allowed me to examine myself. That's what allowed me to grow and go through this transformation that I'm really still in the midst of.
Yeah, yeah, so very true. The reason I mentioned that is you're probably aware. In fact, I think you are a member. We have this Living in Black global network now.
Mm-hmm.
And inside of Living in Black, my intent all along was to bring those of us who have experience in the movement, experience in organizing, in activating our people, in developing agencies that are action agencies, to bring us together and put us in a on-point position to be able to distribute our ideas and to gather a mass of people that would then function as a critical mass for the launching of various initiatives. You know, wonderful vision.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, as you recognize, people love these big forums. They love being able to chat and debate and argue and this and that. But it's been a lot of work keeping the shape of this moving a certain way, because as you know, anytime you have a forum where you're going to have 1,000, 2,000, I think we're up to about 3,000 people right now, you're going to have a number of voices who, the analogy I use is, they like to come to the feast, to the banquet, and then they jump up in the middle of the table hollering about their oppression is the world's greatest oppression. And then when you tell them, get down off the table, fool, or when you just say, get down off the table, then they start pointing at you and say, you are the source of my oppression. And so it's been a little bit of work kind of managing that, and some people have gotten a little angry at me, but you know, some of the things that our people engage in require you and I and those of us who have seen this movement work, and we've seen it not work over the course of decades. Sometimes we have to turn to some of our members, younger and older, and say, your behavior is inappropriate for the best self-interest of the group.
You know, two thoughts come to mind. The first one is, I once heard a powerful black leader say that in order to lead us as a people, that you have to love black people more than they hate themselves.
Ooh.
And it's just as you said, we all are still carrying the chains and scars and the vestiges of the Ma'afa, the great suffering, the calamity and the catastrophe of the colonization and enslavement of our people. We're all carrying that. Doesn't matter how many books you've read, how many, you know, seminars you've been to, or how many African scholars you've studied, or how many times you've been to the motherland. We are all carrying some of that, but we also all carry the seed of the divine within us. And it really is a matter of getting our egos in check and understanding that we're all on the path together. But there has to be some submission to leadership and understanding that we're going to operate by certain principles. And I think a good place to start would be the principles of Ma'at, you know, truth, justice, righteousness, reciprocity, balance, order, and harmony.
Now, as you're traveling around the country, around the world, with the African Origins on Tour lecture series, just how important, just how critical to your presentation is transferring to the audience the critical value of these fundamentals of Ma'at?
Well, I would say, you know, since I've been on this path, Brother Keaty, I found that I had to literally live the principles in order to get to the places that I was attempting to get to.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, when I was, you know, working on my Kwanzaa book, which came out back in 99, I found out that I had to employ each of the principles of Kwanzaa in order to get the book out. I had to unify with other people. I had to have self-determination to raise the money to get it published and distributed. I had to use collective work and responsibility, pulling other people together in on the project, cooperative economics, raising the money. I operated with Nia, a sense of purpose, Ujamaa, you know, so all these different things, faith, believing that I could do it. When we look at the seven principles of Ma'at, truth, justice, righteousness, reciprocity, balance, order, and harmony, if you're not living by those principles, or at least attempting at your very best, in the very best way to do so, it will show in the things that you do. Eventually, you will be exposed. And so life is an ever-unfolding journey of our coming into oneness with the Most High, living by these principles. But we all fall short, and that's the reason that the sun always rises the next day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You will be speaking also in Egypt here real soon.
Yes, this is, you know, literally a dream come true. This will be my fourth trip to Egypt, and but this will be my first featured lecture that I'll be doing in Cairo, and I'm very excited about it. It's going to be the African origins of our faith. because what happens when you go to Egypt, you really come face to face with the greatness, the glory, and the grandeur of our ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get deep into the knowledge of ancient Kemet, you find that this knowledge informed all of the spiritual traditions of the world. And so we're going to be breaking that down. We're going to be showing how many of the ancient Kemetic scriptures coming out of the Nile Valley informed the biblical scriptures, the Quranic scriptures, and as I said, the spiritual traditions of the world. So I'm really excited about this, be able to share this message on the continent, in the motherland, in the Nile Valley, where our ancestors have been beckoning to us and calling out to us to return home.
Mm-hmm. All right, yeah. And so, yeah, congratulations on your opportunity to speak there. I had the opportunity on my first trip to Egypt in 2006 to speak as part of the lecture series that the tour was putting on. And I do agree, it is an incredible milestone to be able to speak on the Mother Continent. It really gives us a great sense of our purpose wherever we are throughout the world, and being an African and being committed to that centralized theme of creating a dynamic by which all African people will be beneficiary.
Absolutely. And as we look at the African origins of our faith, we have to rely on these principles such as the seven principles of Ma'at or Nguzo Saba dealing with Kwanzaa. We have to rely on those values to be the central operating values that we can all live by, regardless of what background we claim, regardless of what religion we claim, or what perspective we claim. Those are some centralizing principles that will allow us to operate together and move forward together. And I don't know if you remember, Brother Keaty, but it was in Egypt that I met you in 2006.
Yes.
In Aswan. We had met over the phone and done some interviews prior to that, but I actually met you face-to-face in Aswan in 2006.
Yeah, the Dessert Club, Brother Professor Clinton Crawford's tour, Ashra Kwesi's tour, all of us found ourselves in that magnificent city. Aswan, I think, was the favorite city of pretty much everyone who traveled there.
Yeah.
And what an incredible moment that was, all of us meeting. I can't remember the name of the hotel, but all of us meeting at this particular hotel. That was just an incredible moment, especially when you talk about those of us who've been so active here in this country, meeting each other in person for the first time on the Mother Continent. It doesn't get any better than that.
Absolutely. More and more people are making the pilgrimages back home.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so essential to return home, to make that reconnection. I can't say enough about that, but it's so spiritually uplifting.
Yeah.
I tell people that before you make your transition from this life, you have to sail on the Nile and run your hand in the healing waters and have yourself a strawberry and mango smoothie.
I say. Yeah. And now part of your lecture series is the African origins of our faith. Talk to our listeners about this particular topic.
Well, I was very clear in naming it the African origins of our faith for several reasons. There's some people who have written about the African origins of Christianity and things of that nature and have done an outstanding job. I said the African origins of our faith because I wanted it to be known that these concepts and principles informed all of our faith, regardless of what faith you claim. And in so doing, what I did was I simply took, because as you know, Brother Keaty, I have a Christian background and I am in ministry, I simply took 25 biblical scriptures and put them alongside of the ancient Kemetic scriptures that predated the biblical scriptures by over 1,000 years,
mm-hmm.
but that were saying, in substance, the same thing. Now, in doing that, you know, I used to teach a class at a church that I used to attend, and it was called Afrocentric Christianity, and we later changed it to African Origins of Our Faith. And what I would do is I would share some of these scriptures with people, and it kind of blew them away because they had always looked at the Bible as something dropped from out of heaven, and not realizing the history, you know, of that book, and then African people's place in the book. So, for example, one of the things that people don't even realize as they're reading through it, in the second chapter of Genesis, says, and a river went out of Eden to water the garden. And the name of the first is the Pishon. Now, most people don't know that right there in Genesis, the Pishon is actually the White Nile. Then in verse 12 of chapter 2, it says, the name of the second river is the Gihon. Most people don't know, because there's coded language, that the Gihon is the Blue Nile. And then it goes on to say that the same is that which compasses the whole land of Cush or Ethiopia. So right there we have the Garden of Eden. If you're going to use the Bible as an example, you have the Garden of Eden situated right there in Africa. And most black people who would claim to be of the biblical tradition or claim to be Christian are not even aware of that. I can give you a couple of other examples. Keti, from Selections from the Hosea, he says, follow in the footsteps of your ancestors, for the mind is trained through knowledge. Behold, their words endure in books. Open and read them, and follow their wise counsel. Well, we read the same sentiment in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 32, verse 7. It says, remember the days of old. Consider the years of many generations. Ask thy father, and he will show thee, thy elders, and they will tell thee. So again, we have the same sentiment being expressed over 1,000 years before the biblical sentiment being shared. So as I begin to go through these things and show people the connection that virtually every aspect of the faith that they profess comes out of the Nile Valley of Africa, straight from their ancestors, whether we're talking about the idea of heaven, the soul of man going to heaven, soul of man sitting on a throne beside God, God breathing the breath of life into man and woman, a judgment upon the end of this life. All of these things come from out of our traditions. And once we return to those traditions in their most essential form, then we will be able to reclaim our personal power and our power as a people in the world.
Mm-hmm. I say. And I do believe that this is all possible. It's all possible within one birth generation, about 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen that last night's program. I was talking about the future of trends in the so-called three worlds, first world, second world, third world. Mm-hmm. And as part of that presentation, and of course, we don't necessarily appreciate these designations, but, you know, they give us a point of analysis. But the transition of one country, Singapore, from the so-called third world to the first world in one birth generation.
Mm.
And so when we look at the depth of creation, the depth of civilization, of all of the major sciences and arts that emerge from our overstanding of our African legacy, our inheritance, we recognize, as we would pull all this together, any and every one of us can rise from the bottom to the top personally within just a period of a couple of years, but collectively, certainly within one birth generation.
Absolutely, and I think what you're describing is quantum transformation. We know that transformation can be a process, but we also know that there can be kind of an explosion of consciousness that brings about a complete change in a person's life or in a people's life. And I think that we're on the precipice. I think we're on the threshold of that great transformation. Everything that we need, Brother Keedy, we already have.
Mm-hmm.
We already have the economic resources. We already have the intellectual capital. We already have the skills necessary to bring about this transformation. All this is a crisis in consciousness that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It is a matter of consciousness. As Baba Nana Bafour Amankwechi II, Dr. Asa Hilliard, used to always tell us, it's not that we have tried and failed, it's that we have not tried at all. It's not can we, it's do we have the will. We already have everything we need. All we have to do is transform our consciousness, because our consciousness is what will inform the great change that needs to take place.
Mm-hmm. Well, among the many things that can cause a transformation in a short period of time is people, quote-unquote, getting religion. We've seen most hardened prisoners. We've seen people on drugs. We've seen people on alcoholic, people who might be abusing their wife and children or whatever, quote-unquote, get religion, and then see dramatic change within their lives in a short period of time. Yet, you point out in your presentation a distinction between religion and spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
Our people getting religion, we have seen the change on an individual level. Yet, on the collective level, African Americans are said to be the most religious group within the United States. Yet, collectively, African Americans are suffering through a number of seemingly intractable pathologies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why I think it needs to be. We need to delineate the difference between spirituality and religion, because if religion is our focal point, as Malcolm said, we'll end up majoring in minors and minoring in majors. And so the reason why I don't focus so much on religion is because religion is man-made. It's something that is given to you. Spirituality is something that is spirit birth. It was given to you by the Most High as a gift when we got here. And before we got here, we had it. And so spirituality is understanding the nature of who we are. Religion is an interesting thing because it is mankind's best and worst attempt to come to know God. It's mankind's best attempt in the sense that it lays out precepts and principles and doctrines and dogmas, but it's also mankind's worst attempt because most people, I don't know if more deaths have been committed as a result of people who claim to know the divine than of anything else. And so we really have to be clear that spirituality is who we are and how we live our lives. But religion is a man-made thing that has often been placed upon us.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we attempt to do through our presentation or through African Origins of Our Faith, the presentation and the book in particular, is we try to illuminate the teachings and show people a pathway to begin to live the teachings in their life, regardless of what you may happen to call yourself in terms of a religious background.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very important. We're live and direct today. Our guest, Chike Akua, he is joining us on the telephone line out of metropolitan Atlanta, also Osset City, as we call it around here. We're talking about the African Origins on Tour, his presentation, and the body of research, the body of work he brings forward. We'd love to hear from our listening audience today to participate in the conversation. You can give us a call. Our West Coast line is 323-902-2919. You can call us toll-free at 800-842-1409. If you're in the UK, we'd love to hear from you today at 0208-002-9096. You can email us at info@libradio.net, as well as we'll take your Skype calls at LIB or Radio. All of those are going to get you right through to be able to speak with Brother Chike Akua today and be a part of the conversation. And just double-checking the emails, I see no one has contacted us there. Brother Chike, we have so much potentiality.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, our people are wandering around. Meanwhile, in this world around us, there's a tremendous pace of change, pace of transformation that's taking place. Great nations are formulating out of what was one or two or three decades ago colonized space or neocolonial spaces. Great nations are forming. We can see places like Angola and Nigeria and Ghana and other places on the African mother continent, South Africa, that stand right on the cusp of being able to compete with any of the so-called first world or second world nations. So, you know, a part of our transformation is our ability to take advantage of the trends of the era, of the generation. And, of course, technology has been a significant proportion of this. What is the barrier between our collective transformation and our use of these trends and these technologies?
Well, I think one of the barriers is our lack of knowledge about them, and that was one of the reasons why I was really giving thanks to you and the LIB family for what you're doing in terms of building this communication network to be able to reach our people wherever they are. The other thing, again, of course, is going back to that question of consciousness. When you consider the fact, Brother Keedy, that Africans in America are the most highly educated, or let me say the most highly trained technologically, Africans on the planet, we have the access to the most schooling of any Africans on the planet. we have access to more capital than just about all the Africans on the planet. And yet, we have continental Africans who are sitting on top of the wealth of the world, who have the culture and the traditions, who have herbs for healing, who have the gold, the silver, the petroleum, the oil, the bauxite, all of the natural resources that are necessary to create literally now a worldwide economic and cultural revolution. And so there have been attempts in the past to see to it that Africans in America never link up with conscious Africans on the continent.
Mm-hmm.
And that is yet another reason why it's so important that we begin to raise up our youth to impress upon them the critical nature of this cultural awareness that we're talking about, linking them back to the motherland, helping them to understand their connection, not only historically and culturally, but practically, in a very practical sense, that we need to go back and reconnect with our brothers and sisters there because we have business to take care of. We have nations to raise up out of colonization. We have people to build. We have people to feed and clothe and get fresh and clean water to. So all these different things are a result of having the consciousness and awareness. But if you don't even know that you're African, like many of our, you know, every year my students, they would ask me on the first day of school, Mr. Akua, are you African? Or they would ask me first, where are you from? And I would say, I'm from Africa, just like you. Their immediate response, every year, the same thing. I know African.
Mm.
My people from Georgia, my people from South Carolina, my people from Jamaica. And I had to tell them, I said, don't mistake where you were born
mm-hmm.
with where you're from.
Mm.
Malcolm X said, if a cat has kittens in the oven, that doesn't make them biscuits. Don't mistake where you're born with where you're from. And who taught you at such a young age that you're not African? What
yeah.
popped up in your head that makes you say that you're not African? If you knew what you were saying when you disavowed Africa, you would not utter such blasphemy because you're relinquishing your intelligence, your intellect, your achievement over thousands of millennia.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things we have to do is we have to go back and share with our children as well as adults this critical link that we have back to the motherland. The tremendous technological advancements we made in ancient times and link that to the technological advancements that we have at our disposal in modern times, which we created it in modern times too, Brother Keating. Most people aren't aware of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. We create and we create and we continue to create. We've got a first phone call for the program. Do you mind if we take that call right now, Brother Chica?
Sure. Go ahead.
All right. Greetings, caller. Welcome to the program. Your name and where you're calling from.
Good morning. This is Minister Abel.
All right, Brother Minister Abel, always great to hear from you. You're on with our Brother Chika Akua.
Okay. I want to ask Mr. Akua a question about cultural revolution, and I go back to China. When Mao launched his cultural revolution, it didn't just stop at the self-reaffirmation of being Chinese. It extended into other areas of nation building, and this is why China is where it is today. For those of us participating in an African cultural revolution, why does it seem to stop at just self-identification or the reaffirmation of identifying ourselves as African?
Thank you for your question, brother. I think one of the things that we have to look at is what I call conversion of consciousness, and that is moving from information to action. So now you've had this great awakening of this awareness that you're a person of African descent, you have a great ancestry of excellence and achievement and everything. Now what? But see, in our traditional educational setting, part of the transformation process was understanding why you were sent here to this reality, to this place, to this space and time, what you were sent here to do. So transformation and African consciousness must be action-oriented. As a matter of fact, it could be said that if it's not action-oriented, then you really haven't gone through a transformation. Those are what we would call the armchair revolutionaries who have a whole lot to say but very little to do, who have a critique about everything that's going on in the community but have no commitment to changing what's going on in our community. So when you say why, does it seem like it has stopped with just the Cultural Revolution in the sense of just the knowledge? I think that's happened because we had to go through a phase of awakening. I believe that that awakening phase took place during the 60s and the 70s, and now we need to be in the nation-building phase right now. In other words, we need to be able to pick up the phone or hit the email and be able to connect with people in every area of endeavor that are nation-building. If I need somebody in communications, then I call Brother Keating. If I need somebody who's in healthcare and medicine, then we can reach out to Dr. Layla Africa. If we need somebody in education, you can give me a call. And so people in every area of endeavor that can aid in the process of raising up our people.
All right. Brother Masebo, a follow-up.
Okay. Yeah, because I guess what triggered a question, I was listening to Dr. Clark, and he was talking about having a conversation with Malcolm asking, what can I do? And he said he felt he could hear Malcolm's spirit always reminding him to do your best work. And I think for a lot of us, we don't know where our best work is beyond the Cultural Revolution, because not all of us can be in history or sociology or any of the other ologies. We have to branch out and find what is our best work with that culture still being the driving force.
I'm so glad that you said that, because I was listening to a lecture of Asa Hilliard not too long ago where he was sharing some information that he shared with students who were debating. They were in college or in graduate school debating whether to go into history or to go into medicine, whether to go into astronomy or to go into history. You know, they had all these different fields of endeavor, but they were interested in African history. And Baba Asa instructed them, go back and get the engineering. Get the degree in engineering, then come back to African history, and you will know more about African history than I do. He said, go ahead and get the medical degree, and then come back to African history, and you will know more about African history than I do. And he went through all these different things that our people needed to study and needed to master. You mentioned Dr. Clark. Dr. Clark said that the first thing that we should start making is our own underwear.
Mm-hmm.
He said, what self-respecting people can't even make their own underwear? He said, let our revolution begin with making our own underwear, something as simple as that. And you don't even need a college degree to do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there are simple things that we can begin to do on a day-to-day basis that can begin to lift our people up, that don't require a college degree, that doesn't necessarily require large amounts of money. It requires the will, it requires the self-determination, and the consciousness to do so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, makes great sense.
Mm-hmm.
Follow-up comment or question, Brother Administrator Ball, before we get back, before we go forward?
Let me make sure. No, I think that's it. I just want to make sure I covered everything.
Let me give you one quick example, brother. And
okay.
For example, many people, when they're sitting in front of their laptop or their PC, they don't realize that it was a black man who was very much responsible for the creation of it. And his name is Dr. Mark Dean. He's a computer scientist. He's in the National Inventors Hall of Fame. He invented a system which led to the development of the PC. He led a team which built a gigahertz chip which did a billion calculations per second. Now, you know that's got to be a bad African brother right there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if he has studied, you know, if he went through African studies or took African history or anything, but he's out there doing the work, doing his best work. And we can take an example from a brother like that who's doing great work that's literally impacting the world. And that's the kind of work that we have to do. And there are brothers and sisters out there who are doing it that we need to connect with. I was lecturing recently down at Tallahassee Community College, and a young brother comes up to me afterwards. And, you know, I asked him what he was studying, and he told me he was studying engineering. So I said, hey, what do you want to do with that? He said, I want to get into nanotechnology.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, tell me more about that. What is nanotechnology? How does that relate to engineering? He said, well, I want to produce a nanotechnology. I have an invention I want to produce with nanotechnology that would allow a car that's been in an accident to repair its own damages. Did y'all hear what I just said?
Yeah, I
said, that kind of technology is out there? He said, oh, yeah. He said, you get in a fender bender, there a chip releases a certain amount of information in that car that will allow it to go through and repair itself, whether it's engine damage, whether it's body damage. I said, what? You mean like if I cut myself on my arm and my body's immune defense system automatically begins to heal itself to the point where you can't see that cut anymore, the same thing can be done with a car? The same thing can be done with mechanical equipment? He said, oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I understand. As we understand the mechanics of how the body works, well, the body works by mechanics. And ultimately, these mechanics are translatable. The body is, of course, the most complex machine known in the universe, if we're just talking on the tangibility level as opposed to the machines that would be metaphysical. But this is the way that our people need to be thinking about their own sense of purpose, their own sense of identity, and their own sense of creativity in this world.
Absolutely. So, Brother Keaty, you know I got his information.
Mm.
I said, listen, brother, I need you to email me your mailing address because I'm going to send you a free copy of African Sacred Science and Civilization, which is one of my DVDs, because I need for you to have the ancestral knowledge. You obviously already have the modern technological understanding. And he had just seen one of my presentations. I said, but I need to keep in contact with you because now you're my go-to person. I don't know nothing about nanotechnology. But now I know who I can email or I can call about that information. So now we have a link. Now we have a connection, a line of communication to begin to take that to the next level. Because also, that brother will need capital to take that idea to the next level. He will need consciousness. He will need people who are committed to the core. He will need wise counsel and instruction. And so these are the types of alliances that we need to be building wherever we go, whether it's in our area or field of expertise or not.
All right. Brother Mr. Ebo, final comment or question?
No, I think that's it.
All right. Always great to hear from you, Lion.
Okay, take care.
Enough respect. All right. And anyone else wishing to contact us today to speak with our brother Chika Akua, you can give us a call at 323-902-2919. Toll free is 800-842-1409. In the UK, we'd love to hear from you at 0208-0029-096. Email us at info@libradio.net, as well as you can Skype us at LIB Radio. All of those are going to get you right through to Brother Chika Akua. And again, those of you who are listening via LIB Radio, LIB TV, LIB TV, I should say, is today, for some odd reason, the second day of having issues with the signal. We're going to get these issues worked out. But we really, really do appreciate all of you being with us today and participating in this conversation with our brother Chika Akua. Chika, I was thinking that you were already a member, but I didn't see you on our new Living in Black site.
Yes, sir. I need to become a part of that, and that is yet another area of technology that I'm unfamiliar with. People kept telling me that I needed a MySpace page and these different things, and I didn't know how it works. And then you told me, well, we've got something similar to that. So I'm interested in learning about that and becoming a part of it.
Yeah, it's really quite fantastic what we've been able to do with it. And just about 2-3 months now, we've built it up to over 2,700 culturally conscious people. And a few of them cousins of ours, too. And, you know, we're really looking at this as a place where those of us who have been movement organizers or movement leaders can collaborate, who can share resources with each other, but especially can build a critical mass of people. From that critical mass, the various initiatives such as filmmaking, we have a very extensive organic gardening group inside of ours, entrepreneurial groups are formed, the Bring Back Black movement has its own group inside of our larger group. But from that base, those of us that are active can bring forward wonderful changes. We have, I think, 3 African tour groups represented within Living in Black. And so
wow.
many of the things that you're doing, in fact, I would love to see Living in Black and the Dessert Club come together, because I think there are two fingers on the same hand. That hand can only know its strength when those fingers come together and fully cooperate with each other.
Well, I tell you what, Brother Kitty, count me in on that. I will say this up front. On things technologically related, at first, a lot of times, I may need my hand held a little bit, you know, show me how something works. But I'm the type of brother that once I get it, I got it, and I'm off and running.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So, yeah, count me in on that.
Yeah, well, you are, and I've actually just sent you an invitation just a few minutes ago. And we really look forward to your immense contributions. I mean, in Living in Black, we have over, I think, close to 2,000 videos that our members believe are relevant to the upliftment of our people, thousands of photographs and photo albums. I myself have really taken the lead in an area I think is critically underdeveloped and should be redeveloped, and that is the area of the backyard being a organic food production system. And so when you go to Living in Black, you'll see I've put up maybe five or six photo galleries of what I call the George Washington Carver Organic Food Project, which is right here where our studios are located.
Well, brother, I definitely need to get involved with that, because I've got some space in my backyard that needs cultivating.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, and I can put my two sons to work on that.
That's right. That is so positive. And there's just so many wonderful areas where we can build together, grow together, develop together. And for every reason we could imagine, the time for us to do all of this is right now. And so that's what we're here to do. We're here to encourage, we're here to inspire, etc. You talked about the use of the computer technology and information, these information technology and things. There is a long legacy and a record of African invention and African technologies brought forward by the creativity of African people, especially those of us in the Maafa and the diaspora, that our people just aren't simply aware of.
Oh, so many indeed. I mean, I'm thinking of, you know, most ancient medical textbook that we have comes out of the Nile Valley, you know, and it has so much different information on this medical papyri going back but over 3,500 years old.
Mm-hmm.
It's the oldest medical treatise. I hate to call it the Ebers Medical Papyrus, because Ebers was just a European who either found it or stole it, and they named it after him.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not aware of what the actual original name of the text is, but there are examples in this ancient medical textbook of obstetrics, trauma, circulatory system, neurosurgery. Our ancestors were doing brain surgery, anatomy and physiology, diagnostics, pharmacology, circumcision, and contraception.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's amazing the different things that we were doing, not experimenting with, but that we had mastered. Then you have the Edwin Smith Medical Papyrus. Again, you know, we've got that European name of the person who found it or stole it.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the oldest document on surgery, that describes 48 injuries to the head, face, neck, and spinal column. Over 90 anatomical terms are mentioned. These are the types of things that our children need to be studying
mm-hmm.
carefully. As a matter of fact, thanks to Dr. Charles Finch, he has shared with us in Ivan Van Sertima's book, Blacks in Science, Charles Finch has an article where he talks about Africans in Uganda in the 1800s were doing a cesarean section.
Wow.
There was
wait, a European missionary. Back up. Run that by me one more time.
I may have to send you the picture, brother.
Mm-hmm.
There was a European missionary by the name of Dr. Felkin who was in Uganda, and he witnessed a cesarean section being performed by Ugandan medicine men and healers and physicians. And when he witnessed it at that particular time, he did a diagram drawing of it, and he published it in the Edinburgh Medical Journal in 1884. Prior to 1884, prior to that publication, Europeans had no success at performing cesarean sections.
Mm-hmm.
Either the mother would die or the child would die or both would die.
Mm-hmm.
But after he published what these Ugandan Africans did, and he said that they didn't look like they were just doing this by chance or that They were experimenting. They knew exactly what they were doing, so there's no telling how long they had actually been doing it,
mm-hmm.
skillfully. It wasn't until after 1884, and Dr. Felkin published that, that Europeans started to be able to perform cesarean sections successfully where the mother and the child lived.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, so this is the African sacred science, African, emanating out of the minds and the hearts and the spirits and the souls of African people. Sacred, meaning that which is holy, that which is sanctified, that which is set apart, that information and that knowledge that we must be initiated into. Science, coming from the Latin word scientia, which means to know, that our ancestors were knowers of the way.
That's right.
Just talk about it. They did it. They walked the talk. And they speak to us from the ancestral spiritual realm. They're waiting for us to tune into that frequency because they have all of the answers to the challenges that we're facing. All of the answers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're simply waiting for us to tune in.
That's so true. And that is what we are here to do. We are here to tune in, to get our people active, to get them on track, to coordinate, to collaborate, to get our people excited. You know, in the Igor Pavlov's dogs studies, they talked about these processes of excitation and inhibition, mm-hmm. in which an idea comes into our mind, and we add energy to it by exciting it, thereby making that idea the basis for our new action. Or if we should choose to, based upon our conceptual framework and understanding where that idea and actions would follow, we repress that idea. And so therefore, not engaging in frivolous and stupid and non-productive activities. We now, at the stage right now, we have enough knowledge about what to do, how to do, what we've done, how we can do, what the opportunities and the environment around us is. I think that we're really at this point working on exciting our people around a narrower set of agenda items and helping to inhibit our people from some of the frivolous, detracting, and non-productive and exploitative activities that our people are engaging in.
Oh, Brother Keaty, it's so easy to get caught up, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's so easy to get caught up, you know, watching the plug-in drug, you know, watching the nonsense that's on television, getting caught up in all of the different pop culture and all those different things, rather than spending our time involved in nation-building activities and community development, building strategic alliances and relationships that will help us to do the work that we're here to do. Now, that's not to say that we don't need to have time to unwind, to relax and rejuvenate and rebalance.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, most of us, most of the people in our community are trying to relax and unwind in ways that are counterproductive and self-destructive. So we end up trying to relax and unwind by drinking, smoking, or eating things that we have no business eating, going places we have no business going, being with people we have no business being with, and all of these sorts of things. And so what it really requires is a radical reinterpretation of life. You know, one of the things that I've often said, Brother Keaty, is there's something about the way that we're living that's not conducive to life. And that's why you really piqued my interest when you talked about the George Washington Carver garden.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've often said that if, you know, when I'm instructing people or counseling people on starting their own school and different things like that, and they ask my opinion, I say, any educational institution that we build, by the time a child is in the eighth grade, they should know how to grow their own food,
mm-hmm.
make their own clothes, and to defend themselves with precision.
I see.
That means any African-centered school should have a garden in the back.
Mm-hmm.
There should be a program that shows them how to make their own clothes. You know, just the basic things.
Yeah. Well, as you mentioned, that this is a dialogue that I have recently elevated as one of my lectures. I first delivered it a week ago tomorrow on the Farce Called You Lie. On the Fourth Called You Lie.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That it is called We Declare Independence.
Mm-hmm.
And as a base for practical independence, I say all we have to do to witness this independence I'm talking about is go back and look at your great-grandparents' home.
Mm-hmm.
In your great-grandparents' home, You went into the backyard. There was a grocery store out there with fresh produce. The garage was a place where you repaired the car. They had the tools, the jack stands. If you needed a new starter, you needed to change your battery, change your oil, you did that in the garage. There was a sewing room in that home where you could see sewing, knitting, quilting. These things now are being replaced. The kitchen was not just, you know, family center and a place which was a restaurant, which is being competed against nowadays with fast food restaurants and all other kind of restaurants, taking 20% of the restaurant business out of the kitchen, but charging you an equivalent amount for what that other 80% cost to cook in your own kitchen. But the kitchen was also a primary medical clinic. We had all of these systems. We had nursery schools in our houses. Nowadays, people go to the gym, but used to be your gym was your yard.
Right.
And so there are probably, I think we identified 15 different production systems, including woodworking and crafting and these other type of systems, even elderly care. We put our elders now in homes, spending big money for that, but used to be the elders were not only in our homes, but they were part of our daycare system. And a transfer of wealth and knowledge.
Absolutely.
So we declare independence from being exploited by these corporations, but all of that follows the point that you make about us being self-sufficient and creating our own systems. Again, I think it relates to a lack of knowledge of self.
It does go back to that. You know, something simple that I've done with my son, I, you know, began showing my son the things that I do. So he travels with me from time to time when I go to different colleges, universities, and schools to lectures. He helps burn my DVDs, package them, and some of the other different things. He sees what I do. And, you know, I taught him, you know, when he started wanting to make some money, I told him, you know, I gave him a couple of jobs that he could do. And, you know, he did the job and came and said, you know, where's my money? So I got tired of him asking me for money after he finished the job. So I said, listen, Daddy doesn't get paid most times unless I get an order online. But like when I go to do a speaking engagement or I have, you know, books that I'm dealing with in school systems, I said, get paid unless he submits an invoice.
Okay.
You want to get paid by Daddy. From now on, you have to submit an invoice. He said, what's that? I said, well, an invoice simply tells your name, your address, how I can get in contact with you, service you provided, the date that you provided it, and what you charge for that and what I owe you. I said, when you submit your invoice, then you can get your money. Now, he was 7 years old at the time.
Wow.
Now, I must say, Brother Keaty, I did think for a second, that, am I asking him to do this too young? So my that ancestral wisdom kicked in and said, no, it's not too young, because he can get on a computer and pull up a website to play some games on the computer. And he can type into a template on an invoice. So that's exactly what he has to do. And that's exactly what he does. And it's showing him that I'm not raising you to be anybody's employee. Raising you to find a job.
That's right.
I'm raising you to be self-sufficient, to know how to provide goods and services that people need and are willing to pay for. So both of my sons will understand that, and they already understand that at a very early age.
That's true.
They will operate according to that. And so that's just a very simple example of something that we can begin to do with our children to inspire them to begin to go into business, to have an entrepreneurial sense of providing the things that our community needs.
That's so, so very true. We're live and direct. Our guest, Brother Chika Ekuwa, is joining us. We do invite you, our listening audience, to be a part of this conversation. Oh, you don't want to miss this one, no doubt whatsoever. So you can call us, and we're about to take a break, but we can maybe take one call before we take a break. 323-902-2919. Our toll-free number is 800-842-1409. If you're in the UK, we'd love to hear from you today. Call us in London at 0208-002-9096. All of those are going to get you right through and speak with our brother. Just before we take a break, Brother Chika, for those who want to get a hold of some of your materials, you have your DVDs, you have your books, what's your latest book out, and where can people find you on the web?
Well, you can go to AfricanOriginsOnTour.com. Again, that's AfricanOriginsOnTour.com. On that site, you will see a video link. You will also see several of our DVDs, including the African Origins of Faith, African Sacred Science and Civilization. We also have the Miracle of the Ma'afa. So we have several DVDs from History to Destiny, Paradigm for Black Business Prosperity. We also have a link regarding the 21st Century Underground Railroad Digital Video Magazine. So all of these things can be found on our AfricanOriginsOnTour.com site, and you can place your order there. And Brother Keedy, I don't know if you are in front of your computer right now, but if you can go there, we've got something special on there just for the LIB family, as a matter of fact. Go on to AfricanOriginsOnTour.com and scroll all the way down, maybe about halfway, a little bit past halfway, you'll see something that says special thanks to Keedy Awadu and the LIB radio family. And we're offering a special right now to anybody who places an order by tomorrow. You will get a bonus CD of one of my messages entitled Honoring Our Ancestral Obligations.
All right. Well, definitely I'm going to add one of these DVDs into our catalog. We definitely appreciate and we support everything you do, as you do represent us. And you do represent us wonderfully well. And it's a circle. An investment in Brother Chika Akua is an investment in knowledge and wisdom, which uplifts myself, makes me stronger, and better able to deliver what I do. Eventually, all of these things keep coming around. It's not just a circle. I say it's a spiral. All right. And let's do this. Let's go ahead and take our break right now. We've got much, much more to go with the conversation today, and we do appreciate all of you being tuned in with us on the LIB radio network. The time right now, 8:10 a.m. on the West Coast. That makes it 11:10 a.m. for our East Coast listeners. So don't you even go nowhere. Brother Chika is going to be back with us. We're going to take more of your phone calls, more of your emails, and we will be talking about very practical things that we can do, as well as we definitely want to talk some more about your upcoming tour to Egypt. Be right back with you.
Hi, this is Ron Brewington, and you're listening to LIBRadio.com, community radio by the people and for the people. You know, radio is a great vehicle for learning and getting information. And here on LIBRadio.com, I can't think of a better place that you can come, hear great information, and do it in a way that you can enjoy it and walk away saying, I have been educated, because the importance of radio, there's no question about it. LIBRadio.com, living in black.